Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dynamite from the post-wrestling site, AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly, as we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads, and if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show, and if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello! We are still here, or you are seeing us for the first time. It is Rewind to Dynamite, and boy, we have got a lot to talk about tonight from the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago, Illinois.
We had a lot to talk about already.
Yeah, did I overload the news?
No, I don't think so. Like in the cafe, there are no limits.
It's not about weight limits. It's about no limits.
That is correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We went through a bunch of stuff. If you are a cafe subscriber, you get the show live, you get the show ad free, and you get the news. As we went through the death of Ozzy Osbourne and his many attachments to pro wrestling over the decades, updates on Ben Askren, Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, and Filthy Tom Lawler, health wise, and running through the last two nights of the G1 because Wei Ting, dove headfirst into G1 coverage this week. You've seen pretty much everything up to this point now.
I have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so him and Kate have a podcast out now on the cafe going through Tuesday and Wednesday show. So we gave some of our thoughts there. The official announcement of Roman Reigns and Jey Uso against the Braun. NXT thoughts as The Undertaker, setting up a TNA title match. I mean, the obvious conclusion you came out of his segment with Trick Williams, and a huge bill being introduced in Congress that could change the makeup of boxing as well. So all of that can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com, where we go live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. G1 coverage underway, as we mentioned. And with your cafe subscription, that means you also get Rewind Away. And Thursday, boy, do we have a show that is going to maybe not jump off the page at you, but this is going to be one of those sleeper hits. That's my prediction. The best of the WWF Volume 16.
So I've yet to start this, and
I built it up too much.
I know
there is one match though that I wish I could be with you when it starts.
Well, I know it's only an hour and a half, thankfully, so I'm actually going to save it for tomorrow, and I'll be watching it. This is not an easy one to find. It's a Coliseum home video released from the 80s, which is exceptionally rare, but it does exist out there, in particular on the Internet Archive. And if you go to forum.postwrestling.com, John has actually linked it in the feedback thread, so you can watch it in its entirety, and then you can listen to us talk about it. Such gems. And honestly, John, I'm reading this list. Nothing's really popping out, okay? So I'm trying to think which one is the one that you really want to watch with my myself, but names like Tatsumi Fujinami versus the Giant Machine, Jumping Bomb Angels versus Bull Nakano and Condor Saito, Mr. Fuji in action, the Killer Bees and versus Barry O and Iron Mike Sharp. Could it be this one? Warrior versus Hercules. Many jams, including Andre the Giant versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Harley Race versus the Junkyard Dog, the Rougeos versus Valentine and Bravo.
I can't wait to do the show with you tomorrow. I will. Okay. You will know what it is once you get to it.
I cannot wait. I've already seen some of the clips of the Mean Gene interstitials in between.
Oh boy,
and they are already as bad as you can imagine. So
yeah. Are we going to get Gene Okerlund posthumously canceled?
No, I'm sure he's done a lot worse than even this that is buried. And yes, we'll never see the light of day on Netflix or Peacock or anything else.
That's your teaser, okay? Mean Gene Okerlund goes to Tokyo.
No,
we will dissect on Thursday's Rewind Away. So look forward to that. And we've got more coming up this week. I'll be doing a G1 show with Eric Marcotte on Friday, and then WH comes out of the bullpen on Sunday to join Karen Peterson, and we get WH's first view of this year's G1 field and his unvarnished thoughts.
I can't wait.
On to Dynamite, we are heading to the Aragon Ballroom. Same announced figure as last week from WrestleTix, 11:44 in the building. And we have got a tournament way. It's tournament season, and Tony Khan is...
When is it ever not tournament season?
The days that don't end with Y. We have a tag title eliminator tournament where the winner of this tournament will get a tag title shot at Forbidden Door. And man... when I saw these brackets, I was like, wow, this is a deep tag division. So we've got FTR against Jetspeed, TBA against TBA, TBA against TBA, and then my pick, TBA number 7 against TBA number 8.
Come on, you got to build some anticipation, right? You know, listen, I hear these engagements do what best when you announce them just hours ahead of these shows.
This is how like the NBA playoffs should work, is that like you tune in, you don't know what teams are playing and you don't know who they're going to be paired with. You just tune in and you wait for a tweet from Adam Silver like 20 minutes before the game.
You know what?
Anticipation is greatly overrated.
Perhaps, yeah. But listen, I can already guarantee that it'll be a pretty satisfying field, okay? Because there are like... very few bad tag teams in AEW. I don't know if there are really any bad tag teams. And
I'm sure it'll be a great tournament. I just want to... what was wild to me, I can understand, like, maybe, God forbid, we book a week ahead. But literally, to tee up Collision, their promotion was, the tag title tournament will continue on Collision.
So either they don't know or they want to save something because maybe announcing ahead of time might give away a result, perhaps.
Well, it was also process of elimination because they did give us a clue. It will not be the Guns because Colton Gunn is hurt, which, if true, really sucks for them. They were gone forever.
Oh, my God.
Come back, and they're injured instantly. And, Colton's out. And the fact they brought it up tells me it's – that's what they said when they were teeing it up. They just offered it that it won't be the Guns on Saturday.
Okay. So we can
eliminate them.
Eliminate them. All right.
Renee is with Hangman Page, and he says that he is out for revenge for Colt Cabana. They would replay the angle later from his vicious beatdown on Saturday. And MJF walks in stating that he's not even going to need this contract to beat Hangman, but Hangman says, you're going to have to use that contract or else earn a title shot. And I know you're not going to do that because you're a gutless coward. And he walked out and stormed to the ring for his match with Wheeler Yuta. And there would be a lot of MJF on tonight's edition of Dynamite.
There's a lot of Hangman Page too, which I think is very appropriate considering he is the lead character now. He is the person that the company should be centered around. And I love this interaction that he had with MJF in the back. Like, you know, we see what we expect out of, I guess, a babyface champion is just somebody who is incredibly knowable and doesn't necessarily show, I guess, as much anti-hero attitude as we've seen perhaps in the late 90s when that sort of thing was novel. But Paige isn't quite an anti-hero, but he is a hero with a real like attitude, and you cannot just like bully him. You cannot just, you know, talk down to him without him doing something about it. So he almost at this point, in comparison to maybe his first title run or his initial days in AEW, he looks like the type of kid who would have been bullied in school but then just went through puberty over the summer and just like had some crazy fights with people like in the streets and has learned like, you know, karate in a sort of like very intense training dojo, and now in September he doesn't even have time to acknowledge the bullies anymore. That's how he dealt with this MJF, and I think they've done a great job of like retaining the edge that he developed as a heel while still keeping him this like very likable babyface, becoming a more likable babyface as a result.
Well, he comes out, strong reaction as expected, and Wheeler Yuta comes through the crowd, jumping Hangman from behind, and in the picture-in-picture, they did show us the attack on Colt Cabana, which he was just a bloody mess and choked out with the chain on Saturday. Page just comes back, throws him into the barricade, clothesline, buckshot, and he pins Yuta in 3 minutes and 14 seconds. A pretty just matter-of-fact, quick win for Hangman Page.
It just kind of continues what I just said. You know, he's not a babyface who's just about to let people walk over him because he just happens to be a champion. They didn't even go 50-50 with this one like you might expect for an AEW TV match. This was a squash, you know, and it wasn't against an unknown either. Yes, Wheeler Yuta is sort of like the whipping boy of the group, but he still usually gets a bit of offense in. This was not really any of that, and it didn't need to be. This show needs to continue to make Hangman look like a dangerous person, and I thought they were successful.
Well, the post-match, he wraps the chain around his wrist, around his fist, and starts busting Yuta. He's bleeding, and then he puts the chain around Yuta's neck, and he's about to hang him when he stops, telling Yuta no one is coming to save you, and leaves Yuta lying and pretty much convulsing in the ring from this. And it's left with the idea that you are a sacrificial lamb, that at the end of the day, the Death Riders are not going to go out of their way to save you. They were ready to let you die at my hands.
It was interesting. It made me wonder if they were, again, teasing a Yuta defection out of the Death Riders with some of these words. But by the end of the night, I don't know if that was meant to be the direction.
Billy Starks is with Athena, and she has been tasked with taking out Toni Storm, and that her movie is almost over. But she is not to beat Toni Storm. She is just to take her out, leave her for dead for Athena. Our first tournament match, FTR against Jetspeed. Big Stoke is out on a crutch selling Cope's spear from last week, and these four had an incredible match. Mike Bailey, I thought, was just amazing in this match. He hit this super Rana off the top onto Cash, and then it's him and Knight hitting double missile drop kicks. Then they do the deal where Knight hits the springboard splash while Bailey simultaneously hits a top rope acai to the floor. Dax goes up to this little girl in the front row offering his hand, and then pulls it back and flips off the girl's father. That's a heel in 2025.
Is that good crowd work?
It's tremendous crowd work. A memory she'll have for years, if not a story for her future therapist. Cash then hits a dragon screw to Bailey on the floor. We get double sharpshooters by FTR inside and outside the ring. They go for the powerplex, but Knight gets his knees up, and Bailey hits a shooting star onto Dax's back. The four are on their knees trading strikes, and Bailey springboards, avoiding Cash diving into them, and he hits a top rope corkscrew to the floor right in front of the desk. And I don't think I'm ever going to watch a flip now right by the desk without thinking about JD McDonagh and the margin for error here. But especially
these reinforced desks.
Yeah, these super reinforced, undefeatable desks that they have invested in. So UFO splash is hit, or attempted, and Dax gets the boot up. Slingshot powerbomb by Dax onto Bailey into a backslide for a near fall, and then Dax blocks the victory roll, sits down on Kevin Knight, and grabs Stokes' crutch for leverage and pins Knight in 17 minutes and 32 seconds. And I thought this was the highlight of the whole show for me.
Yeah, really, really excellent match. I would even suggest beyond the quality you would expect from the even high standard of Dynamite. I thought Bailey in particular just was amazing. He just gave us like some of his best stuff, I felt. And I thought it was a great match. Jetspeed, shocking. They're great. But I think judging by this sort of booking and judging by the booking we've seen of them, they've kind of settled into the role of being like this very dependable team for great in-ring action, but not necessarily a team people are supposed to take seriously as contenders. And maybe that's the ceiling right now, you know, ultimately, like when looking at all the other teams that are in the division. Again, Jetspeed are great. Could they have gone further without like all the Hurt Syndicate shenanigans? Maybe. But at present, I mean, you kind of have to be more than just a great in-ring team. You have to be able to, you know, effectively sell character and effectively sell stories. And those are still some of their shortcomings right now.
Yeah, I understand that. I still see like a higher ceiling for these two. But, you know, the Hurt Syndicate program did not do these two any favors. But I mean, when it comes to people that have to decide like where they want to go, like sometimes you can go, hey, man, what if they had gone to WWE or AEW? With Mike Bailey, I think this guy 1,000% made the best choice for his career, because I could not imagine this guy navigating a WWE system.
I think he would have done really well in NXT. I think they would have booked him really strong.
NXT maybe. Call-up would have been, I think, very rough for him.
That is, a very different
question. I think ultimately, if you're going to WWE...
Like, look at Carmelo Hayes, you know? Like, size is still, no matter what they say, it still means something, you know?
And Carmelo can talk, and with due respect, that's not Bailey's forte. And I think he would really struggle there. I just don't see him getting out of the gate like he did here in AEW. But the guy's a fantastic performer, and we will see where this tag team goes. So now FTR, I mean... What do you think about their chances in this semifinal?
I would say pretty good, but they do also have a program that.
Who do you think they have their eye on? Who do you think they favor to win the other quarterfinal? Do they have a preference?
You mean TBA or TBA?
I mean, it's TBA and TBD. Who do you think?
Oh, God. I'll give you an answer. TBA.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
G1 Climax season continues on the Post Wrestling Cafe as we march toward the final on August 17th. Every single match in the tournament will be covered. Plus, we're going back to 2001 for a review of The King of the Ring, featuring Kurt Angle taking on Shane McMahon and Edge winning the tournament. Plus, John and Wei are going to be reviewing all episodes of the WWE Unreal series on Netflix. Ask Away, Post Pro Res, Collision Course, so much more can be found monthly at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Shivani interviews FTR. They bring up what Cope said last week, and Stokes says that Copeland belongs in prison for putting his hands on me. Copeland is a loser and a cancer to AEW. So Copeland responds to this, coming out to defend his name, and Stokely reminds him that you cannot come within a certain distance of us. So they have, they basically have a restraining order against Copeland. So he then announces, well, I can't come near you, but I've made a business deal, and their business is hurting people. And out come the Hurt Syndicate, who have accepted, I guess they are now the APA, and Copeland has hired them for the night. And Lashley and Benjamin proceed to beat the hell out of FTR. And then Copeland at the end tries to spear Stoke, who misses, and Copeland accidentally kills security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was very confused by all of this, as was MJF.
Why? Why were you confused? He hired people to attack his opponents for him.
I took tonight as like a hard shift that the Hurt Syndicate are now babyfaces and MJF is a heel. Instead of like we're wavering of the Hurt Syndicate, who have largely been heels, even though the crowd reacts to them as babyfaces. This was full on. We are going out of our way to present them as our babyfaces. And then we just skipped like 3 months of story to now Lashley wants MJF out of the Hurt Syndicate over nothing. Like just one backstage argument. It just feels like they're totally just ready to skip through so much of this Hurt Syndicate thing.
Yeah, I mean, in reading the MJF segment, I took that more as, because it was so sudden, I took it more as a misdirect, like an intentional misdirect, so that MJF's opponents would think that he wouldn't have backing behind him, so that we might get a surprise cash-in or something like that. That's how I read it, because I think it's kind of unlike AEW to be so sudden about shifting a program that hasn't necessarily received negative reactions. Nobody's really been complaining about MJF's role with the Hurt Syndicate. So
well, that's fine if they do that, but we will be violating one of Tony Khan's rules, because when they were in the back,
invisible camera,
they very much had Renee leave the room, and the idea that no one could see this but them.
Well, that would exactly play into the theory, because they were performing for the camera that was there.
Why didn't they ask the cameraman to leave?
They're performing so that people could see it. Okay. They're faking their interaction to dupe the audience watching at home via this camera.
Okay. I hate this.
It's I thought it was, I mean, again, if it's turning out that way, then I think it would actually be perfectly logical.
Okay. So again, it means the Hurt Syndicate comes out of this as aligning with MJF, and they're still heels at the end of all of this.
That is my belief.
Okay.
But in this case, like, I'm
not into this Copeland thing at all. I hated the restraining order thing last week. I think that greatly needs more context. Like, Tony Khan has approved this. Tony Khan is fine with this.
So somebody did let us know in the YouTube comments that, I guess Stokely and FTR, under their anonymous emails, didn't just message Tony Khan, but they messaged Warner Brothers Discovery. And maybe we could assume, through the logic of professional wrestling.
When was that said?
He said in the promo
that they sent anonymously to, emailed
that anonymous letters were sent to Tony.
How
Khan
did Stokely know about these anonymous emails?
The suggestion is that he and FTR sent them.
Of course it was. That's how everyone took it. It was okay. Like, Tony Khan's an idiot. That's like the only one who doesn't understand this.
But okay, we can assume Tony understands, but would the executives at Warner understand?
I mean, this guy is stating this right on your own television. Maybe that David Zaslav would fall for this.
I'm not thinking that deeply about like what is essentially just like,
I don't think they're thinking that deeply, or maybe they're thinking way too deeply on this. This guy will be fired if he touches FTR, but he can take out security. He can take out Stokely. And
if you want to have an issue with this, then I think a lot of wrestling storytelling would be grounds for complaining about. I mean, we just had a fucking contract signing of an unconscious person signing another person's hand, you know.
I was not here on Friday. I don't think I would have been singing the praises of that either. But
I don't think this was nearly that bad.
What if an email was sent to USA Network about this very illegal contract signing? Man was absolutely not of sound mind to be signing this.
So I did find this somewhat interesting that we had, for the first time, FTR and the Hurt Syndicate interacting, and in fact interacting in a physical confrontation. So of course FTR are now advancing in this tag title tournament. They could have been using this to build to an eventual FTR versus Hurt Syndicate match coming out of this, but it doesn't seem likely, because they're both heels and they've been kept apart for this long.
Are they heels?
Well, I don't think this was a babyface turn for the Hurt Syndicate.
This was absolutely a babyface segment for the Hurt Syndicate.
Yeah, for one night only. Again, I think as part of the misdirect to let you think that they're no longer with MJF.
Okay.
Yeah, so
is Copeland in on this?
Copeland's just hiring them.
Okay.
Because they're for hire.
I guess so. We learned that they are for hire.
I mean,
so.
what I'm sensing is I don't think the FTR are winning this tournament. Because they've got plans with Cope and Christian anyway, and I don't think that necessarily needs the championships. I see, like, if it's anybody winning the championships, I think it'd be, or sorry, winning this tournament, I think it'd be a babyface team. It could be Cope and...
No, I think we're getting the Hardys and Edge and Christian as champions in their respective companies by the end.
Maybe the Hardys will come back in and take up one of the TBD spots.
Yes.
Yeah, and the Dudleys will take up another.
We're going to do the last great TLC match. They've got to reclaim their glory after Montez Ford proclaimed their TLC match the greatest of all time.
Yeah, sure.
I wasn't as big a fan of this segment. But we go backstage, and hey, I will be even keeled here, because I thought that Nick Wayne sounded much better this week. We had the matriarchy. I would love to know if these were just taped back-to-back, or if he had a week to prepare for this. So they were in the exact same spot as last week, and we have... Nick Wayne explaining, last week we explained why we attack Christian Cage. We are starting our quest to become the most dangerous faction in AEW, which, I mean, from this visual, they have a long way to go to establish us as the most dangerous faction in AEW.
Are these the new Death Riders? I wonder.
I mean, I wouldn't want to find these three down in a dark alley at night, but They are the most dangerous faction, or will be. That's their plan. We are Uncaged.
I certainly hope that's not the name.
Oh, I felt like it was.
I much prefer the matriarchy. I mean, as derivative as that is, it's not as derivative as Uncaged, which I think is just
reminds me of like a bad like MMA show.
I was gonna exactly say the same thing. It's something like the fight arc would have aired in like, you know, the 2009. Just the compilation of like
STEM.
Local. Yeah, just the compilation of like local like, you know, knockouts and things like that. Yeah, no, Nick Wayne is still very much like in a developmental when it comes to like, you know, public speaking. And I think it's totally fine. AEW doesn't have, well, they don't have, he shouldn't be in a developmental system. So he should be practicing on TV like this. He'll improve quickly.
Yeah, this will be interesting of how they balance all this. Like you look at, like, let's just assume that All Out September 20th, you want to, that is your date you want to get to this Copeland, Christian Cage reunion. And like Cage has to come back. He's got to do this Nick Wayne thing, unless you hold that off into the background at some point. I mean, you could involve them somehow, but there's a lot of different stories that they're trying to tell here with Christian Cage and this all gets figured into
the
next few months. Yeah.
So by suggesting that they're going to prove that they're one of the best factions, are they going to enter the tag team tournament?
It's all booked.
No, it's not.
Well,
they could be one of the unannounced.
They just have to go to Adam Pearce. You know, Adam Pearce would just give them a title shot. They wouldn't have to go through all these hoops to go through a tournament or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, why not put them in the tournament? Moxley and Shafir do a promo, states that Hangman fought the fight of his life at All In, but now you have to do it every day and you have to be ready to go again and again. I made a mistake and I'm going to fix it. We know that the best version of Hangman rode into Arlington, and tonight we'll find out what kind of Hangman rode out of Arlington. And then Shafir walks up to the camera and she mouths something like, shut up. Is that what she said?
I don't think so. It must have been a lot worse.
I rewatched this. I could not make it out. She did not make it easy to figure out what she said.
Well, I imagine it was some sort of like a bad word that we were censored from hearing.
Oh,
but I know a few bad words. And I mean,
someone said shit on the show tonight. So I don't know how bad something could be that she said.
It must have been so bad that they even censored it on Triller. So just use, it's up to your imagination.
Well, it's done really well. I thought she just did this on purpose. Like she mouthed the words and just didn't make a sound. That's what I thought.
It's a word that's so bad, you've never even heard it before.
Okay? Oh boy.
That's how bad it is. How offensive it is. He's also wearing the key still, despite no longer having the briefcase.
How did he get the key back?
Oh, well, she's got copies, obviously. But they don't have her briefcase.
She made duplicates.
Yeah,
maybe it's the key to something else.
Maybe it's just her house key.
Maybe it's a safety deposit box.
It could be, yeah.
They've got like RRSPs together or something. I don't know. Shivani brings out Will Ospreay, who flew himself here as a surprise and asked Tony to have 5 minutes to speak. He's been struggling with neck problems for 10 months that have been causing him issues, but I kept it quiet, which was my mistake. But I just wanted to get us over the finish line. I made a promise to help get the title back from Moxley, and we did it. But it turns out I have 2 herniated discs going into my spinal column. But don't worry, it's treatable. I can go through therapy, and I'm hopeful of being back in 31 days.
Yeah, that's how far we are from Forbidden Door.
Well, it's August 24th. It's July 23rd. So okay. Roughly.
All right. Do you have any intel, John, on the legitimacy of this one?
This one I do not, but I took this to be probably fairly. This is their Gabe Kidd, hoping that he'll be ready to go at Forbidden Door. But
well, there
you go. Yeah, I mean, we had the Fight Roll report that he was expected to be out for a month, and it was like touch and go with Forbidden Door. And it feels like that's exactly what he said here.
Yeah, I suppose. But I honestly would be pretty daring to announce him essentially for Forbidden Door. If they weren't sure that he was going to be there, don't you think? You know, so at least I have to think he'd be pretty confident, whatever this is, that like he would be at performing at the show. And I have to, like, is this the reason why we had the segment, you know, just to spur ticket sales for the event? I imagine, to promise, in case you were skeptical, whether or not Will Ospreay would be there. Buy your tickets now because Will Ospreay will be there.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe, maybe.
That's what they told you.
Okay.
So he said that he's coming for the Death Riders. It's eye for an eye after what they did to him. And he's coming for each of you dickheads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Swerve came out. Gave him a big hug at the end of this.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Julia Hart, Sky Blue, and Tekla, they have formed a group. It's only a sin if you resist. We're not friends. We're just allies of convenience. We're not sisters. We have one bond, and they called themselves the Triangle of Madness.
Triangle of Madness. Okay.
How's that compared to Uncaged?
I think Triangle of Madness is better. Yeah.
It was either that or Blue Heartla.
Blue Heartla? Triangle of Madness, I think it is fine.
Tom,
I
mean, it is.
They don't even need a name, honestly. They just look so cool together.
Groups, you know, do not need names. That's my new thing. Other than if you have four members and I got to type down the individual names like the Death Riders, then you need a name. But for three is fine.
So the Seth Rollins group should continue to remain unnamed, you think?
Well, I include Heyman in that as well, because I got to type down four names when they come out, and it's too many. Three I can handle, but not four. Four you need shorthand.
I'm fine with Triangle of Madness. If they want to take their time till they really get something that they like, that's fine too. But I think it's great. You know, these three are all heels, but we really know they're baby faces, okay? Because the crowd already loves them. They look way cooler than any of the baby faces do. So good luck at any baby face trying to get cheered over these three. But whatever, like, it gives something for all you know, an identity for all three of them.
This looks like, you know, art for a new, you know, CW show. It's about to debut.
I was going to say, like, maybe like an alt country band, maybe.
Yeah. I hope they gain a fourth and then we can have the Square of Madness.
A square. Okay. Square. How about like eight? And we can have like an octagon.
They can't use Octagon. They'll get sued. Yeah. Renee interviews Willow, and she lost out on winning $100,000 last year. So now she's coming after Tex for losing her chance at $100,000. Unfortunately, Tekla blew it on this vignette.
That looked like high budget production. So, I mean, she had a lot of plans for this, didn't she? Who was it? Who was it that said that they were, how they were going to spend it? It was on social media.
With
No, it was Queen Aminata.
Oh, Queen Aminata said how she was going to spend it on
Statlander. Yeah. We don't know how Willow was going to spend it.
Yeah, we never learned.
No.
I'm sure there will be another chance to win $100,000 in a match. Then we had the segment that I obviously should have given way more attention to detail, like Wei did, with the Hurt Syndicate. MJF doesn't understand why they worked with Copeland. MJF explains, we made a business relationship. MJF just says how he wants his title back. So Lashley puts him up against the locker and said, we're not your lackeys. All I hear from you is I. Well, I want you out of the Hurt Syndicate. And puts the thumbs down and they walk out on MJF. And he's left alone.
It's just way too sudden for it not to be something that we should be skeptical about.
You're probably right in this sense with the MJF deal, but I mean it would suggest of you know, getting to this Hangman match sooner than later,
or at least some sort of cash in attempt. Yeah, which I think today we learned can take place at any point.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. With Athena, we did get, well, we'll get into it with this match because it's Tony Storm, Billy Starks, Eliminator bout with Athena watching in the balcony. Storm used, I guess she was catching up on the G1 too, because she's borrowed the Mongolian chops and hits a Thez press. There's a victory roll by Storm. It gets reversed. And then after hitting the hip attack, she goes for Storm Zero. Stark stops her, and a Senton Atomico lands on Storm's knees, and Storm wins with the TCM chicken wing in 9.5 minutes. But after, Stark nails her with the belt. She's down, and Athena is waved down from the balcony. She's like, shit, if we had planned this, she should have been a lot closer to the ring to watch this match. She's all the way up in the balcony. It took her like a significant amount of time to like get down, and imagine she had to take an elevator down. So she finally gets there, and she bashes Storm with the contract, knocks her into the steps, and then just waffled her in the head with this contract. Pulls out the pen, but unfortunately, Alex Windsor comes to the rescue, and she runs Athena and Starks out of the way, and she is challenging Athena for the ROH women's title on Collision and saves Toni Storm here. But yes, we do get the, you can do this spur of the moment. You do not have to announce in advance. So we are doing the Money in the Bank cash in.
Yeah. The only way to make it official is you have to pull the pen out and sign it, which I believe Christian did last time.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought it was like a nice little sort of like, you know, continued building of this Athena cash in tease and just continuing to establish her feud with Toni Storm. I think like everything with Billy Starks being attached to her has been translated well to, you know, a Dynamite audience that probably largely has not seen much of their work in Ring of Honor. I do wish that they gave a bit more of a feature for Alex Windsor last week on Dynamite, though, because outside of the gauntlet, we'd really kind of see nothing of her. We saw her, like, she was on Collision last week, but the reception that received here upon like saving Toni Storm was, I think, largely apathetic, because we just, people don't really know her, and they certainly don't know her relationship to Toni Storm at all.
Then we go immediately to Swerve and Hechicero, with Callis introducing Hechicero, claiming him to be better than El Santo, Mil Máscaras, and Bandido. And Swerve gets swung around with a hammerlock applied, and then Swerve, who is now incorporating more headbutts into his offense as one of his transitions, hits a 450 splash. Hechicero kicks out, then ends up popping him up, taking the back and into a Mahistral cradle. And after a rolling flatliner, when Swerve gets to his feet, he goes for the Swerve stomp, and Lance Archer appears, sending Swerve off the top, and we get the DQ finish in 11:16. Josh Alexander is also out, prompting Brody King and Bandido to run down, and they fight off the Don Callis family, leaving Swerve in the ring for Okada to hit him from behind with a chair. And Swerve stops the tombstone and hits the dreaded headbutt and puts a chair around Okada's neck, goes for the house call, but Okada retreats and saved his neck.
Yeah, really just a way to build to both Okada and Swerve and Hechicero versus Bandido. And yeah. I'll have to say, like, I was a little disappointed by the match. You know, I number one, it's the finish. I think it's always lame, especially in AEW, where they just opt for like the double DQ because they feel both guys can't lose. Mm-hmm. But it's Hechicero. I know he's going for Bandido's championship. Don't book the match then if you're that concerned, right?
It's weird because like DQs are more, it's not like they never do them in AEW, but it's still rare enough that for the beginning of this match, I had that exact same thought. It's like neither one of these guys should be losing, and my default is not just doing a non-finish. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, WWE, that's much more commonplace when you see that. But yeah, I agree with you. I wouldn't say this was a match that really, you know, Hechicero had some cool offense, but nothing that you would say jumped out in terms of a match.
It was neat seeing Swerve work like a slightly different style, but I can't really say the chemistry was that strong between them, at least not in this example.
Alicia Toot is with Ricochet and now GOA. They're no longer the Gates of Agony. We've condensed. They all won on...
They're Goa.
Goa.
Mm-hmm.
Or Gore, if they include Ricochet.
Gore. G-O-A-R?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I mean...
Gore. Or, yeah, that works.
They all won on Collision Saturday night. So Goa won $200,000, and they're going to invest in their quest for gold. What does that mean in storyline? Are they going to bribe Tony?
Well, I think
I don't think they have to pay to get into this tournament, or do they?
I don't know what that.
What I mean, quest for gold.
I took it to mean that they're going to invest in better nutrition. Okay, maybe get a plan for a better diet.
I think Khan's doing fine.
Yeah, he's probably
look at
doing
this
fine.
Guy.
Maybe they're gonna invest in some high quality training equipment. You know, just invest in their a better sleep schedule, perhaps a nice mattress, orthopedic.
That's what's held them back. that's why Gates of Agony have been stuck on Ring of Honor.
Man, sleep is very important.
Bad sleep.
Sleep is very important, John. You know this. Yeah, I think Swerve is a good leader for the stable. I think the promos are good, and they're trying to inject some fun personality in the Gates of Agony for the first time. Look, they gave him sunglasses. Okay, how do you spell fun? Ask the Undertaker. Put on a pair of sunglasses. All right,
fun in the sun. Yeah,
we're still in pretty early stages here, but I mean, I am interested in seeing how they develop. Yeah,
MJF comes out. He says, "I don't need Lashley to get my title back. I am not executing this contract because I'm going to beat Hangman fair and square." So Mark Briscoe interrupts him, telling MJF how he stole that win from him at the Casino Gauntlet and wants to face him next week. But MJF turns it down, stating that, "Mark, when the pressure is on, you lose, whereas I win. Everyone thinks you suck, Mark. And I understand why the people like you. You're funny, you're entertaining, but no one thinks you're a top guy. You're a circus clown. They parade you around for cheap laughs and cheap pops, and the people don't really respect you. But there is someone from Delaware they did respect and look up to and would be worth my time. But no one will ever respect you, Mark, as much as they did your brother, Jay." And this is enough to send Mark off the handle. He chases MJF away, and Mark is out there for the main event. So not next week, but time to be determined of MJF and Mark Briscoe.
This felt like certainly like a redo of the initial segment that these two had before the gauntlet, right? Except not as clever, because in that one, you had Briscoe anticipate the J line. Here, it was just like MJF giving it to him and Briscoe getting mad, like MJF exactly wanted.
This felt like your analysis of Mark Briscoe the last 3 weeks of continually believing this guy could be a world champion. And MJF thinks this guy Wei Ting is out of his mind.
You know what?
You might have been the fuel for this.
I am Tony Khan. I'm revealing it. Yes, you've caught me. No, I mean it's. I think obvious to anybody, certainly who might have seen the piece or has just kind of like been watching Mark Briscoe. He's been featuring Mark Briscoe at a very regular pace, and I think he's through this MJF program has allowed him to cut more serious promos. And the continued, like, sort of pestering of MJF in telling Briscoe that he's not a main eventer, well, tells me that Tony Khan actually does have plans of, by the end of this, making Mark Briscoe a top-level guy. And that means world title-level guy. I feel a lot more confident now after seeing this.
Well, I think this should be, like, a really long-term deal. And I would say, if you're going to do this match, whether it's Forbidden Door, whether it's TV, like, I think most people assume, like, it's just a question of when MJF will eventually win this title. Like, there's a lot of reasons to do it. They're so babyface heavy in this company. But I would do this match in the next month, and I would have Mark win before MJF is champion. And I think that's something you can go back to down the road with MJF and Mark, and eventually you can't. Like, people will buy that as a title program, I think, and make the stakes that much bigger. But I think Mark could use that win. And MJF is Teflon, and if he is getting this title like by the end of the year or whenever the time is, like, yeah. And people are into this program. I think that you could certainly do this at the pay-per-view.
It just feels like such a long time from now where they may revisit this for a title, you know, like, because Hangman just started his reign. You kind of have to let that simmer for a bit before MJF takes it from him, and then you need to wait a little bit longer between that and when Mark Briscoe could actually challenge for it, right? So that we're talking like maybe a year, you know, or at least half a year, which is, can they keep Mark Briscoe hot for that long, I guess.
G1 Climax season continues on the Post Wrestling Cafe as we march toward the final on August 17th. Every single match in the tournament will be covered. Plus, we're going back to 2001 for a review of The King of the Ring, featuring Kurt Angle taking on Shane McMahon and Edge winning the tournament. Plus, John and Wei are going to be reviewing all episodes of the WWE Unreal series on Netflix. Ask Away, Post Pro Res, Collision Course, so much more can be found monthly at postwrestlingcafe.com. The main event was Briscoe and Claudio Castagnoli, and Claudio sends him over the barricade multiple times and is just like riding out the count, but Briscoe would fight back. Darby appears in the audience and distracts Claudio and then just leaves. We never saw Darby again.
He's I guess he's staying in Chicago, we could assume, right? And he just like shows up, like sits in the top, sits in the stands. Maybe next week he will be front row.
Is he going to face Hogan at Starrcade next year?
Yes, sure. Mm-hmm.
You better get that tan. So Briscoe fires up, hits a somersault dive through the ropes, a cactus elbow off the desk, and then hits the froggy bow for a two count. Claudio stops him and body slams him off the turnbuckle, thumbs him in the eye, and hits the European uppercut. But Briscoe kicks out and then just catches him with a small package out of nowhere. And Mark Briscoe wins. So Shafir enters, they go after Mark, and Moxley runs down, Hangman is out, and Hangman just storms in. They make a big deal out of the fact he's just walking right into the fire. He's outnumbered, he doesn't care, and says that, Moxley, when you said I didn't want Texas death, everyone knows you lied, because I did. And I want to prove that, and now you don't think I want to be champion. Well, I'm going to prove it to you. I want a rematch with you next Wednesday. But now you're the challenger, meaning you play by my rules. So that means everyone but the referee is banned from ringside. I know your answer is yes, so I'll see you next week. Dumbass.
Mm-hmm. Not wise ass. Dumbass.
Dumbass.
Yeah.
And there we have it, Moxley. And they made this graphic in record time with the stipulations on it and everything. So next almost, Wednesday.
Almost like they knew what he was going to say.
Oh, come on, Way. Spur of the moment challenge.
Yeah, well, what does it mean to you that they are going to this rematch for free TV next week?
It means that they have another idea for Hangman at Forbidden Door.
Do you think, like, Chicago, Aragon Ballroom is the right setting for it?
I think you could have this be a bit bigger than the Aragon Ballroom. I guess this also, like, unless they were to do it at Collision, I guess there goes my thought of Moxley and Colt Cabana in Chicago. I thought for sure they were going to do that in Chicago, like Moxley just running through Colt Cabana, and that would set up the rematch with Hangman, where Hangman like comes to his aid at the end or something. But no, they're not.
I assume they felt like the angle on Collision was probably enough. I smell angle for this too, you know, like for these sort of TV rematches. I mean, again, MJF is there. We kind of like have done the thing where we're trying to convince the audience that he's no longer with the Hurt Syndicate. So I could see a cash-in attempt at least being teased. If not, could it even be executed? You know, could it be that soon that we might get an MJF successful cash in?
Well, if you're one of those 1,100 people, it could be a very monumental show next week then.
Yeah. I mean, let's also be honest, you know, like they could probably use the ratings hit as well, especially now without Ospreay, without a Kenny Omega around. This will probably do well, right?
I mean, I thought it was very clear last week when Moxley was not taking time off that they were going to do the rematch, and they're doing it maybe a little sooner than I thought. And that is, you know, the focus is you want to pull a number for this, and depending on, like, I also think by next, they're probably not going to shoot the angle next week, but you do kind of have to get your main like match or matches set up for Forbidden Door, and I don't know if they'll have that coming out of next Wednesday's show. But
also got the Darby thing lingering around, like he could very well somehow, well, everyone is banned from ringside, whatever that means, right? But
have restraining orders filed? Is Warner Brothers going to be on par on scene next week?
Anonymous
in Chicago
emails
to enforce
this? Are being sent right away, but I anticipate Darby being the Moxley opponent possibly as soon as All In. So how will they pivot to that from this? Is there any possibility of a title change? What do you think the chances are? And not necessarily Moxley, but Also, MJF, I guess we can put it out there.
I don't see it happening that soon.
I think it'd be really deflating for Paige to lose this early. It's only been 2 weeks, right? I do think we will get a tease, though, next week.
Possible. I thought tonight's show, like, I really enjoyed that tag match. But overall, I thought this was one of, like, the more just blasé episodes of Dynamite. It feels like, you know, at the end, they are certainly setting up for a more newsworthy show next week. Like, next week feels like their first big show they have done since All In. And, you know, last week you're still coming off the momentum of the show. This week kind of just felt like a paint-by-numbers show to me. And they are down several of their stars. Like, no Young Bucks on this show either. No Omega. Like, Ospreay was there, but is not really active at the moment. But nonetheless, like, you still do have, like, a pretty strong roster that you can fill out your 2 hours. It just felt to me like a show that, I don't know, it just didn't, to me, click at the level of a lot of these Dynamites that have pretty consistently through the last couple of months.
Mm. I think, like, I had an expectation that, like, after All In, this Death Riders thing would be over. And instead, it just feels like we're still, you know, like, playing off the fumes of it. And it's made the show missing that sort of freshness that I think you'd want from a season premiere, which clearly we're not really at yet, you know. That coupled with, even though, again, I like the Aragon Ballroom as a novelty, maybe like 1 week, to have it here multiple weeks, I do kind of like makes the show feel small. And again, not to say that they could make like fill a bigger arena elsewhere, but I do think maybe just even a different look. Certainly by next week, I'll probably really feel it. You know, I just wonder. Overall, I still enjoyed the show as I usually do Dynamite, but am I enjoying it as much as I thought I would? Maybe coming off of like the biggest show that they've had, maybe you can question that.
It moves very fast. Like, all the goodwill that comes out of a show, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, people have, they're just looking to the next thing. Like, that's just the reality of things. Before we go to feedback, how do you feel about just the Forbidden Door concept of that show being their next pay-per-view? Because I'm watching this show, and it's like, there's a lot of programs I'm interested in, and doing a bunch of like inter-promotional matches, like, granted, we don't know what it's going to be yet, but I can't say it's like, it's really like, I don't know if I'm like that into the concept when there's like, if it's a case of like all these other programs that almost have to be on hold for this pay-per-view.
Yeah. So I'm just going by last year's card, right? And last year we had Swerve Strickland versus Will Ospreay for the AEW championship. That's an entirely self-contained AEW program.
Yeah.
As far as
I think you should do the same with Hangman this time, like, to sell this pay-per-view. Like, I don't think there is that inter-promotional match for a Hangman that like you would want to have like a major contender from AEW headlining this with him.
You had Naito versus Moxley for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, which I don't think received much build. Well, the build was on the
New Japan side. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you'll get that sort of repetition here, but Moné versus Vaquer was pretty much all like told through video package, right?
That was Vaquer's tryout match for WWE.
It really was. And then you had for the TNT Championship, a ladder match with basically a bunch of AEW guys. Like, that really had no New Japan involvement. Trios match with basically the Ops versus the Learning Tree and Jeff Cobb. Like, they put in Jeff Cobb there and said, hey, now it's interpromotional, and barely interpromotional. Zack Sabre versus Orange Cassidy was interpromotional, but again, that didn't really require much build. Tony Storm versus Mina, that essentially, like, wasn't Mina like a pretty active AEW wrestler by then anyway?
She was on TV at the point. Yeah.
Danielson versus Shingo, legitimately interpromotional, but that was also for the Owen Hart Cup. That doesn't require much build. And beyond that, it's like MJF Hechicero interpromotional as well. Okay. They had Hiroshi Tanahashi join the Acclaimed.
The Acclaimed.
And that was their excuse for interpromotional. So, like, the expectation right now for Forbidden Door isn't exactly like an up and down card of interpromotional matches. It's just sort of a sprinkling here and there of guys from New Japan or CMLL in this case.
Yeah, I think you go with like your big AEW championship match, and I wouldn't be leaning on CMLL or New Japan to be involved in that. And then, you know,
give us a dream match. Give us like an Ishii versus blank. You know,
it needs it does need that on it, and it's more slim pickings from now, at least on the New Japan front. But you do need one of those, I think, almost to justify the concept.
Tanahashi will be there. Well, we know
I'm
that.
Sure he will. Yeah,
he'll join something. A tag team. I'm sure
he might require a cane 1 week after the G1. So I mean, I don't know what he's going to be doing.
Yeah, that's a tough schedule rest of the year for him.
Just that flight after the G1.
I know. House of Torture, you can always, they're always welcome, you know, by the AEW audience, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, it's London. It's London, so it's not the, he doesn't have to fly to the U.S., so that's cut some hours down.
Kid is a question mark still, I guess, given the
injury. I would have thought like him and Ospreay would have had a pretty decent shot, like after the angle was done at the pay-per-view. Like Kid and Ospreay like had a reason to be on that show, and that would be considered like, you know, one of your big interpromotional matches to do that as well. All right, everybody, there you go. Those are our thoughts on tonight's Dynamite. We're going to be sticking around a little bit longer on the Post-Wrestling Cafe. So hop on board this month where you can keep up with all of our G1 shows and A Rewind Away for the Ages coming out on Thursday, covering the best of the WWF Volume 16. Yeah, we should have just done a watch-along with Way tonight afterwards, because that would have been something.
My God, would that actually be better? No. Well, we'll review it. We'll do a watch-along.
Thursday, that show is out, and then we will be back Friday night for SmackDown.
Yes, we will. And you will be back in the Post-Wrestling Cafe earlier in the day with Eric Marcotte talking about the G1.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, Eric and I have a cool 5-match show to go through. That's just how the show dispersion worked. So, yes, I will be with Eric on Friday, Way with Friday night. Lots of shows. Okay, goodbye on the YouTube channel. Hit the subscribe button, and now we head on over to forum.postwrestling.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.